Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Progress, but still no deal, as debt ceiling talks run headlong into Memorial Day weekend. And what problems at startup Lordstown Motors tell us about the state of the once very popular electric vehicle market.
There was a lot of excitement in the market about these EV startups that could possibly take on Tesla. What we're seeing now is the market starting to thin out and reality is starting to sink in.
Plus, Disney and Comcast share ownership of the streaming service Hulu, but that may not last long.
Everyone believes right now that eventually this will result in Disney owning Hulu outright. But the issue is, what is it worth?
It's Friday, May 26th. I'm Dion Rubowen for The Wall Street Journal, filling in for Anne-Marie Fertoli. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that move the world today. There is a new deadline for negotiators to raise the U.S. debt ceiling. In a letter to House Speaker Kevin McCarthy released this afternoon, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said that June 5th is the date on which the U.S. Treasury will not have enough to pay for all the government's obligations. Yellen had previously estimated the so-called X date could be as early as June 1st. Meanwhile, Congress has left town, but negotiators from President Biden's team and Speaker McCarthy's office are still trying to hammer out a deal to raise the debt limit. Wall Street Journal reporter David Harrison is at the U.S. Capitol. David, even with a bit of a reprieve, Congress may not be able to beat the deadline because there are still a number of procedural hurdles to jump through. Walk me through that.
Sure. So once you get a deal, that's not the end of the process. First, it needs to pass Congress, and that's a whole other issue. So Kevin McCarthy has pledged to the Republicans who elected him speaker that he would give them 72 hours to digest a piece of legislation before voting on it. So you have, and if he sticks to that pledge, that would be 72 hours or roughly 3 days before you could vote on it in the House, right? You know, meanwhile, you'd actually have to write the legislation. Somebody would have to write the bill. Once you have a deal, you have to turn it into legislative text, and that can take a while.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter David Harrison. The stock market seems to be taking the uncertainty of the debt ceiling debate pretty well. The S&P 500 closed 1.3% higher today to end the week. The tech-heavy NASDAQ rose more than 2% and finished the first 100 days of the year up more than 21%, its best start to a year since 1991. But what about the bond market? The bonds the U.S. government could potentially default on, meaning not pay, are at the heart of this debt ceiling debate. So how are investors in that market responding? Wall Street Journal markets reporter Sam Goldfarb.
The yields on the short-term Treasury bills that are supposed to mature in early June are still not back to where they were before people got all concerned about a default. So the bond market is not signaling a complete all-clear. It probably won't until Congress actually passes legislation to deal with this thing. So yes, yields on those ultra-short-term U.S. Treasuries are down from their peaks just a couple of days ago, but they're still somewhat elevated.
Once America's EV pickup darling, Lordstown Motors is now struggling to get production off the ground. Like many of the high-flying electric vehicle startups that were hyped in the frenzied stock market of the last few years, things have gone from spectacular to not so great. In an unscheduled earnings call earlier this month, Lordstown warned that unless it can restore its deal with Foxconn, or someone comes to the rescue, the company may file for bankruptcy. And just this week, the automaker announced a 1-to-15 reverse stock split in a bid to keep itself listed on the NASDAQ. After news of the split, the company's stock fell by another 10%, and Lordstown today is worth about 1/8 of what it was a year ago. How did things go so wrong? George Downs covers the future of transport and mobility for the Journal. So, George, are the troubles at Lordstown a reflection of waning belief in the overall electric vehicle market, or has the company just dropped the ball?
So, It's a little bit of both. The company bought its factory in 2019 off the back of GM trying to close its factory in Lordstown, Ohio, and then President Trump trying to keep it open. So GM gave this new startup a $40 million loan to buy this factory, complete with all its machinery. And while there was some initial optimism, things just kept going wrong for Lordstown Motors. One of its test vehicles caught fire, which Lordstown said was because of some non-conforming parts on a prototype battery. And shortly after, the company's share price began to tumble. There was a short seller report that accused the company of misleading investors over how firm its pre-orders were. And shortly after that was released, the share price fell again. Then when the company looked into that short seller report, it said that although many of the issues raised were false, there were inaccuracies in its pre-orders. They also had to pause production for a product recall after the company found a problem with some of its electrical connectors, though Lordstown says they've since addressed the issues.
So all of this has been happening to Lordstown at a point in time when everyone in the EV industry has had difficulties, whether it's supply chain problems or economic issues.
Yeah, for Lordstown, the timing has just made it even worse and has laid some of the company's issues bare.
So where does this leave the EV market? I mean, overall, are the big names like Toyota and market leader Tesla just going to reign supreme? Or are there other upstarts that actually have a shot here?
What we're seeing here is, if you go back to 2020, 2021, there was a lot of excitement in the market about these EV startups that could possibly take on Tesla. You saw a lot of investors hunting for the next Tesla. What we're seeing now is the market starting to thin out and reality starting to sink in. And some of the competitors are starting to fall by the wayside. There's still room. We're still seeing new entrants, especially in certain models in the electric pickup space that Lordstown was manufacturing the Endurance for. You have the Rivian R1T and the Ford F-150 Lightning. You've now got the Chevy Silverado EV that's about to come out as well. We're still seeing some entrants coming in, but it is thinning out.
All right. That's George Downs. He is a Wall Street Journal video correspondent who joins us from London. Thanks, George.
Thanks.
The U.S. Food and Drug Administration is beginning to outline the next COVID-19 booster, according to people familiar with the matter. Health authorities and vaccine makers are moving toward targeting the next shot on one of the newest forms of the virus, now dominant in the U.S. Among consideration is the Omicron offshoot nicknamed Arcturus, as well as two others. Vaccine experts advising the FDA are scheduled to meet next month to make their recommendation. Our reporter Liz Esley White says the FDA is preparing to roll out the booster this fall.
The FDA and other federal regulators have said that they would like to move the United States closer to a once-a-year COVID-19 shot. Now, those who are immunocompromised or elderly will probably still see recommendations for getting shots more often, but the idea is to transition to Americans to getting your COVID-19 shot once a year, just like you get your flu shot once a year. Our last COVID-19 shot was a bivalent that targeted both Omicron and the original strain of the virus. The idea here is that if you're targeting what's currently circulating, you're going to get the most bang for your buck in a vaccine.
Coming up, the streaming service Hulu is jointly owned by Disney and Comcast, but maybe not for long. That's after the break.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Hulu's parents are breaking up. Yes, Hulu, the streaming service with almost 50 million subscribers. Its co-parents, Disney and Comcast, want a divorce. But they can't agree on how much each parent should get in child support, or something like that. Disney, which owns two-thirds of Hulu, must strike a deal with Comcast, which owns the remaining third. It's resulted in plenty of acrimony, broken promises, and legal threats. Here to explain it all is Jessica Tunkel. She covers the biggest corporate developments in media, entertainment, and tech for The Wall Street Journal. Jessica, what's at the heart of the disagreement over Hulu between these two media giants?
I think they're really at the heart of the dispute here is that these two companies are fierce competitors. Their CEOs, Bob Iger and Brian Roberts, respect each other, but are really have been competing and outmaneuvering each other for years and years and years. And they jointly own this asset, Hulu. What's expected to happen is Disney is going to buy Comcast's stake out. Both CEOs have been pretty clear that that is likely what is going to happen. But the issue is, what is it worth? Next year, they have to decide what it's worth. And this story kind of goes into all of the kind of backroom dealings that as these two companies have kind of like swiped at each other to undermine the value.
Got it. And you talked about this happening potentially next year. What's the timeline? Why is this happening now and what is supposed to happen next year?
Disney, Fox, and Comcast were all owners of Hulu. Then when Disney bought the Fox Entertainment assets, they took over Fox's ownership and thus owned two-thirds of the company. Then they came to an agreement with Hulu. In exchange for Disney having operational control of Hulu, starting in 2024, Comcast either has the right to sell its stake to Disney at a price, or Disney has the right to buy the stake from Comcast at a price. Each side will hire experts and say, who will say, this is what we think the value is. If they are within around 10% of each other, great, they'll come to an agreement. They've been tens of billions of dollars apart, as we've reported, so that's not expected to be the case. So they'll have to then get a third party in, and then it'll become this whole drawn out back and forth to figure out the valuation.
Why was it that that was scheduled to happen in 2024?
So everyone knew about this agreement. They came out with a press release a couple of years ago saying, we have this agreement starting in 2024. This is when they'll determine the value and either Disney will buy the stake or Comcast will sell the stake. But what no one knew at the time was the night before Disney announced it was buying Fox, Disney and Fox changed the governance rules of Hulu to essentially block Comcast from being able to block them on any deals that Hulu was making. So if Hulu was buying some shows, Comcast wouldn't be able to do anything. And Comcast didn't know about the change for months.
That's sneaky.
It was pretty sneaky. Comcast was a silent partner at the time. So it wasn't until months later Comcast found out about this change and they threatened to sue. And calmer heads prevailed. They came to this agreement.
Hulu had about 48 million subscribers as of April. How does that size, in terms of the broader streaming world of Netflix, Disney Plus, and others, play into the beef that we're seeing play out?
So, you know, what I think one of the issues was is that every year when they would have to value these streaming services, they would look at, A, how many subscribers Hulu had, but also look at, like, what's the stock of all these companies? Like, look, Netflix's stock was, like, skyrocketing at some point. You know, it has come a little bit down since its heights a few years ago, but it's back up. I mean, Hulu is a legit platform, right? It is one of the biggest streaming services. Everyone in the United States knows it. And I mean, I think another thing that these two companies are going to fight about is what content comes with it. Because remember, a lot of the programming on Hulu is from Disney and what used to be Fox. So does right. that content just go with Hulu? Is it like stay on it for a short period of time? What are you valuing? And that's another piece of this valuation that's going to be debated.
That actually leads perfectly into my next question. What does this mean for consumers? Like, how could a resolution one way or another affect where and how people can watch their favorite shows?
Everyone believes right now that eventually this will result in Disney owning Hulu outright. If we're wrong, something changes and Comcast buys it, I think it's really less clear as to what this would look like. I think Comcast will only buy Hulu if they get the content with it. And they would probably want to combine it with Peacock. You know, they have their own Peacock streaming service that has about 22 million subscribers. And this would obviously give it a lot more heft.
That was Wall Street Journal Deputy Media Editor Jessica Tunkel. In other news, lawyers for Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich have appealed a Moscow court's decision earlier this week to extend his pretrial detention until at least August 30th. The appeal, filed yesterday, comes as lawyers try to shorten what has typically been a drawn-out pretrial legal process for Americans detained in Russia. A judge at Lefortovo District Court in Moscow this week granted a request from the Federal Security Service, known as the FSB, that Gershkovich remain behind bars awaiting trial, according to the Russian State Agency for Legal and Judicial Reporting. Gershkovich was detained by agents from the FSB while on a reporting trip in Russia on March 29th. He is being held on an allegation of espionage that he, the journal, and the U.S. government vehemently deny. His pretrial detention was initially set to expire on May 29th. Turning to the U.S., consumer spending rose much faster than expected last month, and inflation unexpectedly picked up. That's according to a report out today from the Commerce Department. Consumer spending rose 0.8% in April from the previous month, much faster than the 0.1% monthly increases in February and March. And the Fed's preferred gauge of inflation, the Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index, rose 0.4% in the month and 4.4% from a year earlier. Markets now are predicting that the Fed will raise U.S. interest rates at its meeting next month, according to Fed Funds futures prices. Coming into this week, investors had widely been betting that the central bank had finished raising rates at its meeting earlier this month. South Carolina's latest abortion ban has been blocked by a circuit court judge in the state, 24 hours after it was signed. The law banned abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy and was signed by the state's governor yesterday. South Carolina's Supreme Court had permanently blocked the 2021 bill that similarly restricted abortion access. This new version of the law is now on hold until it can be ruled on by the state Supreme Court. And Jessica Watkins, a former member of the Oath Keepers militia, was sentenced to 8.5 years in prison for her role in the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol. In November, a jury found her guilty of obstructing Congress and interfering with police. Watkins' sentence is around half the prison time of Oath Keepers leader Stuart Rhodes. And finally, it is Friday evening, and for some, that means date night, which may just end with a good night kiss. It turns out the practice of kissing dates back further than scientists had previously believed. Some of the earliest known instances were recorded nearly 5 millennia ago in ancient Mesopotamia. That's according to a new analysis published in the journal Science this month. Wall Street Journal science reporter Eileen Woodward says the researchers' findings also support previous evidence that kissing is not universal.
Romantic kissing is absent from almost all forager societies that are near the equator, many of the groups in sub-Saharan Africa or the Amazon basin, these egalitarian societies where there's foraging, there's hunting and gathering going on, there isn't romantic kissing present. Romantic kissing was typically reflected in societies with different socioeconomic tiers, with a group of elite. One of the researchers I spoke with mentioned that if you're in a foraging or hunting and gathering society where you don't necessarily have an upper, lower, and middle class, and everybody is responsible for the same jobs day to day, maybe you don't have as much free time.
That said, I hope you all enjoy your free time this long weekend. That's what's news for this week. Our regular hosts are Anne-Marie Fertoli and Luke Vargas. Your guest host this week was me, Dion Rabowan. Thank you all so much for having me. This show was produced by Pierre Bien-Aimé and Kate Bullivant, with help from Mohsen Ali, Anthony Bansi, Julie Chang, Zoe Thomas, and J.R. Whalen, and editorial support from Alan Habercheck, Sandra Kilhoff, Michael Kosmides, Catherine Millsop, Falana Patterson, and Chris Zinsley. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. We'll be back on Tuesday morning after Memorial Day. Again, enjoy your long weekend, and thanks for listening.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.